have this morning Dr. Deborah Ruiz-Wall. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning, Annalyn.
Yes.
How are you?
You have received the Order of Australia Medal in the year 2004.
Yes.
Yes, but what can you remember on the day you received the award?
Well, we were informed beforehand on the day it was printed in the papers, because I think the idea is you have to accept the award. So on the day, it's still quite an amazing feeling by the Australian government. So I was very happy. I was very happy, definitely, when it happened in 2004.
Do you remember the day?
Well, it's usually on Australia Day.
And this is in recognition of your service to the community in the areas of social justice, reconciliation, and multiculturalism.
Yes, yes.
Can you give some details of your advocacies prior to you receiving the award?
Yes, well, when I came to Australia in 1974, that was just 2 years after martial law was declared. And so I was writing articles published in Hong Kong, a paper called Solidaridad 2. And they were available here in Australia also amongst the church goers. And the intention was to let people know what the conditions were in our country and to institute a return to democracy. So that was followed up. I did that whilst I was here in Sydney in collaboration with many people from the Catholic Church, the Catholic Commission for Justice and Peace, and also Protestant churches, Uniting Church and Church of England, based in Brisbane, in Melbourne, in Perth, in Sydney. So I was quite active with the Philippine Action Support Group. And so I joined that group in 1976 when something was published in the Catholic Weekly asking for volunteers to meet up. And that was held in Melbourne. It was funded, you know, my airfare is funded by the Catholic Commission for Justice and Peace. And that was the start of the social justice part of, I imagine, of the award. And then also, as far as Australia goes, in the 80s, the mail order brides issue just exploded in the mass media here. And Australians married to Filipino women, they found it rather embarrassing sometimes. And they felt that they instead, you know, say they're not married to Filipino, but maybe to a Malaysian or something, you know.
They're denying it
because they're so embarrassed. Not all of them, but, you know, some of them. Because the way in which the media tackled the issue was, you know, disadvantageous to others who were here, who were not really, as it's being depicted, working in the prostitution industry, you know.
Did you also face, because I know you are married to an Australian, did you also face some comments from people that you are married to an Australian?
Oh, yes, 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 indeed. You know, people asking, oh, where did you meet? Things like that. Where did you meet? How did you meet your husband? And, you know, as if to say, you know, they're already making assumptions.
Yes.
And see, there were Filipinos who came out here way before that, as you know. And also, you know, Colombo scholars who came out here and made a significant contribution to the country. Mm. So it's just being stereotyped like that. And also, I didn't think it was fair that Filipino women were targeted in that way, you know?
Yeah.
As if to say they were the ones to blame for the industry existing when there were a lot of Europeans and so on coming into the country, you know? And later on, too, when I joined the exposure tour, a sex tourism, anti-sex tourism exposure tour in the Philippines in 1995. Some of the people over in our country were saying, you know, like, look, do you hear children say, when I grow up, I'd like to be a prostitute? So in terms, you know, so there's kind of more fine-tuning about the issue of, you know, legalizing prostitution. It's, you know, it's a very complex issue. It's not something that you can just sort of, you know, ban or, you know, workers' rights and everything. Like in Australia, that was the case. You see, they were wanting legalization of the industry in Victoria in particular because of unionization, so that they weren't going to be just exploited by the pimps.
Deborah, before you came to Australia, you were already working as a journalist?
Yes, I worked with the Philippine Broadcasting Service when I was 20, just before the semester before I graduated from UP, because I was impatient. I wanted to work before I graduated. So anyway, then after that, when I graduated the university, Institute of Mass Communication had recruited me to work with the Social Science Research Council with them. So I worked there for a year in research. That's why when I ended up in New Guinea, the ANU, Australian National University New Guinea Research Unit, had offered me a job. But I declined because when I got there, and I was going to accept the job, but then I was pregnant with my firstborn now, you know, then. Yeah. And then I was also offered a job at the same time without me having applied for it as press secretary for the opposition leader. My New Zealander friends who were associated with the Post Courier and the wife with the government press, it was under the Australian government at the time, you know, had recommended me to the principal private secretary of the opposition leader because their press secretary had resigned, the Australian press secretary. So, you know, it was more fate, wasn't it? I thought. So that's the job I took because it was just based in Port Moresby.
Mm.
And at that time, my husband was appointed in another place in West New Britain where, you know, so I had to advocate for him to be transferred to Port Moresby. So I was alone by myself there in 2 months in Port Moresby.
But it's also worth mentioning that you also teach in the new South Wales
TAFE.
Yes, in TAFE. And I would also like to mention that you had a collaboration with SBS Radio in 1994, where a series of programs aimed at educating Filipino migrants about government services available to them, including information on how to deal with racism, was formed.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. Now, that's great you reminded me of that. Yes, I was involved with them because that started off with the Ethnic Affairs Commission giving us some funding with how to deal with the media. So I was chair of that, and I produced with the collaboration of other people like SBS to educate the Australian people about the situation and, you know, with the injustice that was being experienced by our Filipino wives or Australians, you know, spousal homicide and domestic violence and what the root causes of those sort of problems.
Yeah.
So over time, I thought, now, I certainly, you know, over time, you know, considering also my boys are half Australians and, you know, and having lived in this country more than I've lived in, you know, my country of birth, that I wanted to seek the meaning of my being a citizen. And so I made an effort to get to know Aboriginal people, the first peoples of this continent. And that's how it got started, long before the reconciliation decade from 1991 to 2001 was declared by our former Prime Minister Paul Keating, to find out from the Australian people what recommendations they may make in addressing what they call the Aboriginal problems. So what I did is I did a course with the Tranby Aboriginal Cooperative College. We were the first non-Aboriginal people who were accepted to do the course with them, you know, applied Aboriginal studies. And that was amazing because we met Aboriginal people. They took us to the country. They taught us their culture and their language and their philosophy. And I lived in the block in Redfern for a few months, although I have a house here in Newtown. It's not too far away. But the whole idea was I was then doing a course in theology with the Columbans. And I felt that to do this research segment of the course, I need to live there and get to know people. And I got very close to two elders there, Ali Golding and Auntie Ali Golding, was an elder from Biripi country, from the North Coast. And then also Aunt Joyce Ingram, Auntie Joyce Ingram. And actually, I must tell you that sometime in March, Harmony Day this year, 21st of March, there's a documentary film done on me and my Aboriginal friend, Auntie Ali Golding, which will be showcased at the State Library.
Oh, wow.
This year. Yeah.
So that's in March.
Yes.
Yeah, and you mentioned you lived in Redfern for a few months. I think you have mentioned this during your book launch.
Yes.
This is the start of research for the book, isn't it?
Well, you're right. Whilst living there, I became very active with the Redfern Residence for Reconciliation. And we were able to get a grant from the Australia Council for the Arts to do oral history of the Aboriginal people who live there, you know?
Yeah.
And so we did that, and that was launched over in the community center there. And that became the start of my other oral history projects. One was sponsored by the Sydney City Council. That is the story sharing between Filipino women and Aboriginal elders. And that was an amazing experience for both groups, because they were living on stereotypes that were fed by the media. And then they realized that they had a lot more common ground that they knew existed. So that project was showcased at the Customs Library near Circular Quay. And people were in tears, and the storytelling and sharing continued with the audience. Just amazing. I mean, even I, you know, having done the project, coordinated and everything, it's just, you know, left speechless by what's happened. So it just carried on. And then I was invited by Fairfield City Museum Gallery to do something similar, which was a different kind of presentation. It was a museum exhibition at the museum, but also a book about the stories that they shared. And after that, this is when I discovered after that there were Filipinos, in fact, who had Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander ancestry. So I made an effort after I retired from TAFE to go and live in Broome for 3 months, and also put my hand up to share in the National Oral History Conference that was held there just before just on my arrival. So I shared the projects, the conclusion of the projects that I've completed here with them in regard to, you know, the methods of oral history gathering and sharing. And my idea was to, why I lived there for 3 months, is I wanted to get to know the people and to establish a good relationship, mutual relationship with them, so they can trust me in gathering their stories.
Yeah, and yeah. Your book, Reimagining Australia, Voices of Indigenous Australians of Filipino Descent, was launched last year.
Yes, it was published in September 2016.
Yeah.
And St. John of God Heritage Centre asked me to have the first book launch there. So I certainly said yes, because that was my first oral history gathering. The Torres Strait oral history gathering segment only began in 2015, in July, and that was only 10 days, I went there. So, you know, certainly I owe it to the Broome people also to do the first book launch there.
And it was also launched in Manila and here in Sydney.
Yes, the Australian Embassy had asked if I would do a book launch, and the book launch co-hosted by the Cultural Center of the Philippines with an exhibit. And that too was, for me, such an exciting project to do, because the powerful images of the archival documents and photographs were shared with me just give authenticity to the whole project. So my intention is to broaden people's awareness, both in the Philippines and in Australia, of the intimate historical link from a people-to-people perspective of our two groups of people. And because I think not too many of them are aware of the depth of our historical links.
Yes, yes. And 35 years since you arrived in Australia, and 13 years since you received the Order of Australia Medal, you still continue with your advocacies for women, for cultivating the connections of Filipinos to Australia, for reconciliation and multiculturalism.
Well, it doesn't end.
I know.
It shouldn't end. Because we are always faced with challenges. You know, with social media in the ascendancy, there is the quick staple diet, but that's not enough analysis.
Yeah.
And so we are faced with discriminatory behavior because of ignorance, lack of awareness of what really is going on the ground. And that's why I think we have to keep going with the education and awareness raising function as best we can. So I do it through poetry, through, you know, oral history, through any articles that I could, you know, as long as I have the energy and health, I'll keep going.
Yeah.
So, yes.
And as you know, Australia Day is a special day for all Australians. And this is also a significant day for you, as it is the day you received the Order of Australia Medal.
Yes.
And what's the significance of receiving the award for you and for the Filipino-Australian community?
Receiving the award signifies recognition of the contributions that we have made whilst being in this country, living in this country. And we feel more at ease by the acceptance of the whole society. And recognition certainly is a big thing for us psychologically and as Filipino people living here collectively. So individually and collectively, I think, can stand proud that we're not just taking advantage of the affluence of this country, but also making a contribution towards it, both spiritually and materially.
Ito ang Radio SBS sa wikang Filipino.